Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Listen Give. Good afternoon, everyone. And we are going to be bringing you on today Samantha Rose of the Ultimate Bachelor. She has a company called Product of Get It Right. And she is a wonderful entrepreneur, someone who's created something for the ladies in the kitchen and for you guys who cook as well. So without further ado, we're going to bring on Mr. J. Logan. Mr. Logan, how are you today out there in San Francisco land?
I'm doing pretty fine out here. It's overcast, but, you know, still kind of cold. Chilly's not like the usual May. But I'm doing great, Gail. It's wonderful, wonderful being on the show today again.
Well, that's good. I know that we've had a hiatus. We are working on new things for our show and, you know, working on moving forward in a new direction. Not to mention that I have had serious technology problems in the last month, to say the least, and I'm just so looking forward to the show. Jay, if you wouldn't mind getting us started with one of the great, great storylines that you have today, which is about 50 years of satisfaction from the Rolling Stones.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, they get their own exhibit, the Rolling Stones, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame starting May 24. They're going to have a lot of guitars and memorabilia and a lot of things that is going to remind us how great this band is. As you remember, back in the 50s, there were two great bands coming out of England. And as we know, one of them was the Beatles and the other was the Stones. And they're still touring as of this year, and they have been honored to have this great exhibit. So I just think that, I think when I get a chance, I'm going to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just to see this, because I have a whole year to go see this. And I urge all of our fans of Listen Give, if you get a chance to get to go to the Hall of Fame, you'll be able to see this exhibit. I just want to see some of the clothes they wear. I just think that's kind of funny, because over 50 years, there's been a lot of type of different outfits that they wear. So I'm going to go and check that out.
Jay, that's really interesting. You know, I tell you, I just found out something new, that YouTube just started their paid channel. So we're going to go right into technology for a second here. And what's interesting about that is they're now letting people who have channels, they're now allowing them to charge for you to see their content. And I don't think that's really fair. You know what I mean? As a vehicle that used to be free. So now what I think is going to start to happen is Google is really going to have a competition with other video channels. I know that Vimeo, I believe, has a paid model as well like that, but I think that YouTube is going to have some issues with this, because you used to be able to put fun video up and just explore. Now we've got to go pay for it. It's not going to be fun. I think you can monetize, but I don't know how fun this is going to be.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. It's kind of like how many things that you want to see to be able to pay for. So basically everybody have their own networking network YouTube channel, and you have to pay just like if it was cable TV. I don't think that's going to go too well with a lot of the users. Pretty much people go to YouTube because things are free. And a lot of things on there are not worth paying for. I'm not saying that, you know, we don't have things on there like videos and things that I want to see, but I don't know how it's going to work out. You know, I got to get used to that, because if I got to now start paying to see content on YouTube, I'd rather go to the movies.
Well, you know, that's pretty true. You know, that's pretty, pretty true. I mean, it's, you know, that's a hard one, Jeff.
Speaking of technology, Gail, Apple just got a new patent, and what they're trying to do is the new iPhones that might be coming out in the future, they want these things called invisible buttons. So, you know, for those of you out there that own an iPhone 5 or maybe the 6 or the 7, whenever it comes out, they're going to probably put these invisible buttons in there where buttons disappear. Splatter buttons, when you're not using it, buttons disappear. It disappears to the background. And so it's kind of cool that, you know, you don't have to worry about things being in the way. Whenever you touch your screen, or your screen has a heat sensor, these buttons, whether you're dialing somebody's phone number or pushing in or looking for the keypad, they'll disappear and go back to the regular home screen. And so this is something to look forward to the new Apple technology that might be coming out in the near future. So big ups to Apple, because they continue to improve technology all the time. And I love that company. They're always doing something innovative.
Wow. Amazing. Well, you know, one of the amazing things is about technology here, and especially with the things that we're up to, it's really about how technology can be used to integrate into our everyday life without it taking over, you know. And I'm just seeing some instances where, you know, I've had several breakdowns in the last couple of weeks with my computer, and my computer's not old. And it's really, it's interesting to see, going back to handwriting, because in some cases I had to, and going back to utilizing technology, you know, for the everyday things that we use. What have you found in this situation yourself?
I think I want to go back to the feather and the ink, you know, back with, you know, when George Washington and all those guys, that stuff worked really well. They didn't have to worry about antiviruses or viruses coming on their phone, on their paper, and the ink always kind of worked. Hard to erase it, but, you know, it always works. So I think there's good and bad about that. I think we should never get rid of the pen and the paper. We should always have hard copies. We shouldn't depend on technology so much where it gets rid of some of the old. Some things need to be written. Some things just need to be written down. You know, you can't do it any faster. You don't have to, you know, you can save electricity. Technology has its cons, and it has its good things about it. Some things I like about technology is it's quick and it's fast, it gets to the point, and you can store everything on little tiny devices, and you don't have to carry a bunch of stuff around with you. Some of the bad things is if your device breaks down, or if you get a virus, or something happens to any of your data, it's lost and you have to send it out to be repaired, or your hard drive goes down, you have to send it to a company so they can get all your stuff off your hard drive, and hopefully they can get all the information off of it. So it's good or bad, you know. I just think we shouldn't depend on it solely, you know. I wouldn't do that, you know. I mean, if we look at some of the things that happen with technology, a lot of times things don't go well. You look at the space shuttle, highly technical aircraft, spaceship.
Right.
It still had a problem.
Exactly.
Lots of money. So, yeah, so we've got, as a country, as a world, we got to still keep our eyes on using the old ways. You know, never get rid of the old ways, because and the young kids now, they don't know anything about the old ways.
This is very true. And I think one of the other things too, in addition to that, Jay, is, you know, our next guest is coming on is Samantha Rose. And one of the amazing things about having Samantha Rose on is I love to cook in the kitchen, you know. And technology can't cook for you, although I think they would like to do that with the new stoves and all of the, you know, the way we can definitely cook now is putting our meals in. But this woman created this amazing spatula that I cooked with in the last couple days that I've been loving. And it's flexible.
Wow.
It moves around. And I know as a guy, I don't know if you cook that much, but as a guy, you know, you might say, oh, a spatula, but not this spatula. I mean, actually, I can pick up my food. I'm not scraping the bottom of my pan. It's easy to clean, and it comes in different colors, which is also what I like. And when you wash it, the color is not washing away, even though you can get them in so many pretty colors. That's the other thing. I'm thinking about buying all the different colors. And, you know, this is something I just love with the kitchen, buying all the different colors so that I can match it with the decor. You know, so just kind of funny. So without further ado, we actually have Miss Samantha Rose on our show today. And what's so amazing about her is that she also is on Kickstarter. And she can share her journey as an entrepreneur with us, what it was like to be on Kickstarter and be successful at her campaign and be successful at such a great product. Because I know I love it. And to some of you out there, you might say, a spatula? And I'm like, yeah, it is the ultimate spatula. Because as much as I like to cook, it's helping me get the stuff from the bottom of my pan up. I'm getting all the flavor and everything. So without further ado, we're going to bring in Miss Samantha Rose. Hi, Samantha. How are you?
Hi, I'm just fine. How are you?
We're fine. We were just talking about the technology issues, as you well know, that I've been having in the last few days.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough that you end up relying on these amazing tools, but you rely on them so heavily that when they go kaput, it's kind of a game-stopping experience. I actually had a similar experience of my own over the weekend and yesterday, and 3 hours at the Apple Store.
Really? If you don't mind, I mean, I know this is getting off the beaten path a lot, but as an entrepreneur yourself, what was that like for you? You're running a business, and then you find yourself at the Apple Store, and then you find issues over the weekend. Like, what was that like for you?
You know, I think having grown up with a lot of this technology, it's something that I've learned to take in stride. As I guess everybody at the Genius Bar will tell you, back up, back up, back up. But certainly I run my business from my iPhone, I would say at least 50% of the time. I've got a 3-month-old baby who's actually strapped to my front right now. So having a device that I can take everywhere with me and really effectively work on almost everything but the design portions of our business is an incredible thing. But you're absolutely right. When it goes wrong, it's just a complete showstopper. So fortunately, baby Jack was very indulgent at the Apple Store and let us fix everything without causing a ruckus. But certainly 3 hours that I wasn't anticipating spending on fixing an iPhone, and probably not something that would have happened if I was using a pencil and paper to do all my work.
Well, and that brings us right into it. You know, first of all, I'd love to introduce you to the co-host, Jay Logan, here. Jay was very excited to have you on the show today.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Ms. Rose. Thanks for being on our show today.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, you know, we're, you know, having a wonderful woman, you know, such as yourself here and all that you've accomplished, you know, we'd like to say, you know, before we go any further, one of the things we would like to say is, you know, we know that entrepreneurship is not the easiest road to navigate, you know, Samantha. And we'd like to know and let our audience know how you got started as an entrepreneur.
So, you know, it's an interesting story. My and I guess it really starts when I was much younger and as a kid. My dad, I don't know if he would want to be called a serial entrepreneur, but he's certainly an entrepreneur and started a couple of technology companies while I was growing up. One of which he's running currently. It's called Picture Marketing, and they make marketing tools for brands that help connect brands to consumers and those consumers to social platforms. So I saw that technology from its inception and through its growth really kind of in my living room as a kid. And I think that's, if I can point to a moment, I would say that's where some of the entrepreneurial, spark is born. And then, of course, I spent my teenage years in the kitchen with my mom cooking, and so you bring together kind of a spirit of entrepreneurship and wanting to market things and see things build and grow. And when you slap thousands of hours of cooking on top of that, what you end up kind of thinking about on a regular basis is how can I improve the tools that I'm working with, and is there a business here? Fortunately, with the spatula, the answer was yes, and here a year later, you've got the result.
Wow, Samantha. I have a question, Ms. Rose. I wanted to ask you, what did you find different in working in corporate office and working as an entrepreneur?
Well, I think from the get-go, a lot of it is environmental. Right now I'm running the business out of I've built a home office, and previously I was working at a shared workspace in New York City called WeWork, which has a few locations, and we were on 34th Street and 5th Avenue, and it's a great office space with lots of different entrepreneurs, and that whole spirit comes to life because you see all these people kind of building their small businesses, and sometimes more established businesses are there, and it provides a great opportunity for networking. But, I think in general it's that environmental. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Okay. That's interesting. So mostly it's more environmental. Is it better or is it worse? Or do you have more fun being an entrepreneur, or is it better to be in a corporate situation?
Well, I think for me, obviously, I've chosen the path of entrepreneurship, so, and it's bringing me an incredible amount of joy, and I love that work environment. Whether it's at the home office, which is fairly unstructured, and that could be a challenge. Having shared office space at a place like WeWork, it provides a little bit more structure and a place to meet in a more formal environment. And I think having either a sense of formality about the way that you approach the work, or a place that creates that for you, coming into an office is a very valuable tool. I don't know that type of very loose schedule would be conducive to a high degree of production for a lot of people. And certainly I've had moments where, given that no one's asking me to show up at 9 and leave at 6 p.m., it's easy to get off track. So I would say that although I love it and of course, have chosen it, those challenges are always present. And it's sort of the need to remind yourself on a daily basis that you've got to sit down and do the work. Is important, but that works for me, and I'm very happy doing it. So, and we're making lots of spatulas, so it's getting done. I guess at the end of the day, in some ways, the proof is in the pudding.
Gail, I'd like to add to this question, Gail. I want to ask Samantha, what is your work day like being an entrepreneur? Do you put more hours in as being an entrepreneur now? Do you get off earlier? Is the day longer?
The day is certainly longer. It's absolutely longer, and starts around the same time. I think I'm in a little bit of a unique position for the next few months in that I've just got this little baby boy that's taking up a lot of my attention, and rightly so. But if I can speak to what it was like, before 3 months ago, when things were a little more regular, it definitely sends the workday. I think you end up having a bit more of a periodic schedule, so there's time during the day to run out and do errands, for example, that you may only have been able to do in the evenings, but you definitely make up for that time and more. On the flip side, and last night I was up until 1:30 in the morning, riding back and forth to our manufacturer overseas, because that's when he was awake and I was still awake and I had to get it done. It fills up the day.
This is so interesting. As any show, because we normally have a set of questions. It's funny, Jay asked that, and I have a question as well.
Sure.
Being that you have a son, okay, and you're an entrepreneur, and this is very important for our audience to know, and youth who are a big part of our audience who want to start a business, okay? Here it is, you're pretty young, you and your husband have a son, and then you have your business. How do you balance motherhood and being an entrepreneur, and especially that your business is starting to really, it's not even just starting, it is a lot. How do you balance the demands of motherhood, a wife, and home life, and also the demands of your business?
Yeah, I think I'm certainly not trying to prove a I can do it all point. And I didn't know that I was going to have a baby when I started the business, and who knows what that knowledge would have done in terms of, you know, the decision-making process to kind of launch, you know, what I hope is a long-term successful venture here. But I think, you know, taking everything in stride, I tend to, I guess part of it is just that if I can talk about myself in this way, I just have a personality that sort of tends to be pretty cool about things. I don't get too flustered. So I think that's been a huge part of being successful in all of those arenas. I think that having an amazing partner like my husband is one of the things that makes it possible. It's certainly not something that I'm doing completely on my own. And there's a lot of moments of typing with one hand at that computer with Jack sleeping on my lap or sleeping next to me. And there's moments where ultimately I have to say, you know, that the baby and my husband are the most important things. And those moments, the emails don't get answered. And I think actually in some ways that's a healthy realization that I've been forced to come to. If I can't answer the phone at 8 p.m. because the baby's screaming, you know what? I can't answer the phone, and I'll call them back in the morning, or if he falls asleep, I'll call them back at 9. But I think that it sort of forces a reprioritization in an oddly healthy way, because, you know, it's not necessarily, and this kind of goes back to the technology discussion that you were having right before I came on. It's not always the best thing to be able to answer a business phone call at 9 p.m. for you personally, or for a relationship if you're in one, or whatever. So the fact that we have that ability is incredible and hugely enabling. But I'm also very grateful for being brought down to earth by a very lovely family life that helps me see things through, I think, a very nice lens.
With that said, Samantha, this could bring us into so many other parts of being an entrepreneur. Really, I'm glad you said that, because you're actually a person who's not only in a family, but you're experiencing this and running a business together with your husband. So that's amazing. And that brings us to the next question. Would you share with our audience the wonderful product you invented and why you invented it?
Oh, sure, absolutely. So the Gear Spatula is something that I've been thinking about for, I guess, a couple of years. It's funny, my mom says that I've always been a little bit obsessive about spatulas, which I never recognized. But when I was cooking in the kitchen, I said to my husband one day, like, you know, why don't they make these things all out of silicone? Because I had just burned a wooden handle of a spatula on the side of the stove. I was chopping some onions. I turned around. I looked back, and it was burned. And I realized that, you know, you've got these incredibly amazing silicone blades for spatulas, and they're heat resistant, and they're food safe, and they're actually really environmentally friendly to manufacture. And then you've got handles that are made out of wood or steel that gets really, really hot. And they connect to the blade in a way that tends to attract oils and kind of collect food particles over time. So I thought, you know, why not make it all out of one piece? Why not make it all out of this amazing silicone material? And ordered some silicone molding supplies and did the first kind of batch, just very homegrown in my kitchen. I made a prototype out of silicone in the kitchen after having made a few models that were fairly close to what I was thinking it should look like. And from there, we built a 3D model. And again, we're touching back on the transition from technology to, or lack of technology toward technology. Kind of build the thing with your hands, then you build it on a computer, and you've got a 3D model. And then you send that away to get laser sintered into a prototype, and then you build molds and you move to manufacturing. So it was for the first spatulas we made, it was a very organic process. And obviously now we're manufacturing a few thousand at a time. So more than a few thousand at a time.
But so that's a little bit about you know, not only the genesis of the spatula, but why we made it, and it's my favorite kitchen tool, and I guess it should be. It's exactly what I was dreaming of when I thought, you know, oh, why not just improve upon this such a common tool in X, Y, and Z ways. So it's dishwasher safe, and I haven't been able to destroy one yet. I've tried to burn them, short of sticking it right into the burner flame in my kitchen. They're really heat safe and beautiful to look at. I think the colors were a really big part of what we wanted to do. We wanted to make sure that we were bringing something very joyful into the kitchen and something that people could feel immediately, feel it was an immediately personal item, because you get to match it to, you know, to your personality or to whatever your kitchen is decorated, and I wanted to have those options for people.
Well, I'm not gonna get in. I don't want to hog up the space because I know Jay has another question for you.
Sure.
I sure do. And Gil, I wanted to say I was at her website and I saw a little slogan on it that said, "Good enough is not good enough. It has to be great." And I just thought that was a cute little slogan you guys had. Good enough is not good enough. So I love that little slogan. We hear, Samantha, me and Gail, we heard that you had a very, very successful campaign on Kickstarter. Would you mind telling us a little bit about it?
Sure. So, you know, when we came to the point where we had something that I thought was a finished product, my first instinct was to say, let's build 10 of these and just give them to friends and family. I want one, and I know my mom would want one, and Brian's mom will want one, and give them to friends and family. And then, you know, when push comes to shove and you start talking to manufacturers as a first-time manufacturer myself, you realize, well, building 10 of these is just about the same as building 10,000. So why don't we do that? And at that point, I realized that what I really needed to do was market test it, because it's a premium spatula, it's a premium product. I wanted to make sure that even though I knew in my heart of hearts that it was a great product and something that I wanted the whole world to have, there's a sense that you want at least a few other people in the world to tell you that they agree. And Kickstarter, given the nature of its user base and how enthusiastic they are, I thought would be an ideal testing ground for that. So we set a funding goal of $15,000, which was just about what we needed to actually make that leap to manufacturing. And I thought, you know what, if we don't make our goal, there's my answer. If a few hundred people don't think this is as good an idea as I think it is, why bother making 10,000 of them? No one's going to buy them. but in fact, we, you know, obviously and very joyfully had the opposite response. We had almost 1,700 backers and raised about $48,000.
Wow.
And it was hugely successful for a kitchen product, and also for something that really, when you get down to it, everybody already owns. I know very few people, even in New York City, which, you know, tends to be the takeout central of the world, that don't own a spatula in some way, shape, or form. Extraordinarily grateful to all of those people on Kickstarter who kind of gave us the green light and gave us that extra little boost of confidence we needed to say, you know what, we can move this beyond Kickstarter. We can move it into stores. We can move it to Williams-Sonoma or Sur La Table or wherever the next step is for us. And that's what we're focusing on now.
Extraordinary. That's
wow.
Thank you.
But I tell you, one of the things, you know, it sounds like, you know, the process that you went through on Kickstarter was amazing for you. And I know that there are other people that sometimes, you know, they don't make that mark like you did. Can you tell us what you learned from your experience on Kickstarter and some of the things, you know, that you can help our other audience members look for when they're on Kickstarter itself?
Sure. You know, I think if there's one primary takeaway for me,
it's, I guess, in a word, communication. And to kind of add a little bit of color to that, we spent an extraordinary amount of time, and I should say I spent an extraordinary amount of time answering questions very personally, one-to-one, as often as we could. We sent lots of updates, not too many updates, I hope, but we wanted to let people know what was going on a fairly continual basis with the campaign because, of course, it's their money that's, you know, pledged to help it become a reality. And I think that what I hadn't realized before was how much customer service and sort of holding that as a core attribute for the brand would really help to define us. It's one of the things that we got the most feedback about, you know, oddly enough, was we got a lot of feedback about our feedback and a lot of people saying that they were appreciative to receive the types of answers that they did, and all of those answers were coming from a very honest place. And really, you know, kind of going back, oddly enough, to being a 3 or 4 year old and the golden rule and just treating these backers the way that I wanted to be treated as a backer, because having participated for a couple of years on Kickstarter before running a campaign of my own, what I came to recognize is that I was the happiest when I was seeing that the project creators were, even if they weren't delivering on time, they were at least letting everybody know what was going on. And the real problems in campaigns, and I think, you know, the tough times on Kickstarter would happen when a project creator would kind of go AWOL. And you wouldn't know what was going on, you wouldn't know where your money went, and that type of thing, you know, can be very upsetting because you've not only invested with your dollars, but because it's a community on Kickstarter, and because each campaign tends to generate its own sub-community, there's this emotional investment that goes along with the whole thing too. And you really, you know, you want to see these things succeed because you know that they won't if enough people don't crowdfund it with you. So I think, you know, not to belabor the point, but that for us was the biggest lesson, was just, you know, treating people the way that we really wanted to be treated, giving them honest answers as quickly as humanly possible when it came down to it.
I was wondering, Samantha, did you raise money in other areas outside of Kickstarter also?
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
Did you raise other monies outside of Kickstarter?
Oh, no, we didn't. We didn't, and fortunately, we didn't need to because we were so successful that we were able to cover all of our manufacturing costs and have our shipping costs covered as well, which was something I was not anticipating was the expense of actually, once we've created the product, getting it to people, you know, as far away as Malaysia and as close as 34th Street in New York City was a huge I guess, really monumental task. But we didn't need to raise money elsewhere, and I'm very glad we didn't. Although I will say that my husband and I obviously invested personally in the company and continue to do so to keep it operating while we're trying to get some larger wholesale orders kind of fulfilled because those tend to come with a lot of inventory commitment up front.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's been an interesting road. You know, I have to say I was exposed to fairly well all of the parts of running a small business by virtue of the fact that my dad was building and growing his businesses around us as kids. But doing it obviously is you know, a whole nother matter. And it's been an amazing learning experience. I will say it's, you know, another Kickstarter lesson, if I can touch on one, is just to anticipate those the need for expertise outside your own areas of expertise, right? I'm you know, fine at design, I'm great at marketing, we built a fantastic product, but all of a sudden you've got to be customer service, you know, legal, business development, sales, fulfillment, warehousing, PR. You know,
wow.
You build a team quickly and build your own expertise quickly, or perish, I guess.
Some of the things really about this that's so amazing is that, you know, when you think about, you know, between the question that Jay had for you of raising money outside of Kickstarter, I really like to know something myself, Samantha. Like, you know, people make mistakes on Kickstarter, and you just said about being a public relations person. You know, it's kind of like to do it all, and you were successful in that. And I know it was hard work. And, you know, and I know that it could be probably overwhelming at the time with everything going on with being pregnant. I know that you were and all of those things. My question to you is, being that you did raise money strictly on Kickstarter, what are some of the mistakes you think people make on Kickstarter and some of the blunders that you saw that people were making on their campaigns for Kickstarter that you think personally had them not be successful? And then I have a real quick second part to that question. When did you know that you had connected with your audience and that you were going to make your goal?
Oh, that's a very interesting second question. Well, I will say that if, you know, it's kind of a keeping all of the balls in the air operation, and I very quickly built an amazing team around me. I realized that by calling upon friends and former colleagues for either recommendations or for their own expertise, I was going to be so much more empowered to do a great job. So we have, you know, an amazing woman helping us with PR, who's, you know, a fantastic friend at the same time. Another good friend of mine is helping with a lot of our, you know, our design. My husband does a lot of the finances. I think that pulling together a great team, even though a lot of people kickstarting, you know, begin as individuals, it's really about creating that fantastic team. And I think that's one of the things that can sort of drive success or be a sign of kind of like impending difficulties or failure, and certainly makes the trip, you know, a lot more fun when you've got a lot of people in it with you and can give each other high fives when things go well and pats on the back when things go wrong. I think when communication breaks down on Kickstarter is when you can see that campaigns start to have the real difficulty. When people are posting comments or questions that aren't getting answers, you know, a day or two going by, which is far longer than I was kind of a 1 to 2 hour responder, but you know, campaigns where more than a day or two go by without a response to a backer's question, you'll start to see the community get a little bit more uncomfortable. You can see backers start to fall off of the campaign and choose to withdraw their pledges, or if the campaign's already ended, you'll see people start to get a little bit frustrated. And over the course of a year, that frustration can, you know, can build to anger and to legal action, which has happened with certainly more than one campaign, but of the about a dozen campaigns that I've personally backed and participated in, one of them has now entered legal action because the creators just kind of disappeared to Thailand and with all of the money and stopped communicating with everybody. So, you know, and that's a scary thing when it happens, but I, you know, for me, those were the two big signs: constant communication and the ability to build a team around you who can be part of it with you. I think those are not only the indicators of something that will be a very successful campaign, but also when they start to go wrong, those are all, you know, they're the signs of a campaign that's not going to do too well or that's going to have problems after it closes. And repeat your second question to me, so I've got it fresh in my mind while I answer it.
Well, what I wanted to know is people make other mistakes, you know, in Kickstarter. You've done the, you know, you shared with Jay, you've done the public relations, you did all of that stuff, okay? And the question I had is, inside of doing all the public relations, all of that work, and, you know, what are the mistakes that you see that people make, okay? And in addition to that, I think you've already answered it. In addition to that, the moment you know that you clicked with the audience, you're building, you're gonna hit your goal.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so that moment of clicking, you know, I think oddly enough, that happens very early on for most campaigns. I mean, a little bit of it has to do with the moment that you get your first recognition outside of Kickstarter. That's always a very exciting thing, I think, for project creators, is when some news or media stream or blog kind of catches wind of what you're doing and highlights it for their members. That's a big moment, obviously, a bigger moment, the bigger the blog or the bigger the media outlet. And that for us happened, I think, on the first or second day. So we knew fairly quickly. And one of the things that I think was important to me personally to kind of build early on was this sense of very strong branding and a brand personality that I believed in. So we wanted to make sure that everything looked really professional. We wanted to make sure that it looked, I guess, believable, for lack of a better word, because, you know, even though we in our heads knew that we could accomplish what we were promising to accomplish, the only indication that backers and potential backers have is the brand, and that's really, you know, that's the personality that they're going to end up relating to. So once we had everything up and running and we're past the first kind of 48 hours, had a blog hit and saw people asking questions to Product of Gear and answering questions as Product of Gear, and that brand started to really come to life, we knew that we were good to go.
Wow. Samantha, where would you say people make their mistakes as entrepreneurs developing their business?
Oh, gosh, that's such a broad question, you know, and it can happen. There's so many easy ways to make mistakes. You know, I think I just to kind of compartmentalize the answer a little bit and make it personal, I think the way that we avoided mistakes was just simply by projecting and then enacting a very honest way of doing business. If you got an answer from us, it was the real answer. It was the same answer for everybody. We were trying to make everybody really happy. And I think if I can kind of expand that to entrepreneurship in general, I think that if you are acting in the world as an entrepreneur, the way that you want to be acted upon as a customer, you've got a lot of the bases covered, you know, and then beyond that, there's just a huge amount of intelligence and strategy that you kind of got to either have or have an instinct for, or again, build that team to bring to bear on the project, because I think a business venture, you know, there's so many moving parts, which I discovered extraordinarily quickly, practically overnight. And you've got to be able to multitask and keep all of those moving parts afloat, and either yourself or you've got to be able to manage the team that can do it. So it's a little bit of a reverse way of answering your questions. That's kind of what goes right or what makes it go right. And luckily for us, nothing has gone super duper wrong yet. So I don't have as personal an answer for the mistake, kind of category. Although I'm sure it will come as time goes on, and we'll have to kind of weather that storm too.
Well, my last question, and I believe I just stole Jay's time here with you. So Jay's got another question for you. But my last question to you is, having a son, you know, being pregnant during the time we're still, you know, navigating the entrepreneurial market here, okay? For me, as you know, a woman and a lot of other women who want to have children and went through that process, I think you went through the perfect timing because you can share with the women here and for the men to know what that's like. Being a woman who's an entrepreneur, has a dream, makes a product that's easier for us women to use. How was it being pregnant and still dealing with the demands, again, of building your business, you know, and even though you have a very successful relationship with your husband being there for you, so how was it for you personally? What kind of toll did it take on you physically?
You know, I think probably my body needed a lot more sleep than I was anticipating or at times giving it. But it was really, you know, it was a balancing act. I was very lucky. I had a fantastic pregnancy. I had a great time. I was really active throughout the whole 9 months. So it didn't kind of lay me out in the way that I've, you know, had friends who've had more difficult pregnancies kind of experience. I got really lucky. It was actually an amazing and you know, not to overuse the word, but kind of a beautiful, like, experience. I was kind of bringing two things to life at once, and just very lucky that our fulfillment window, which was in early December, came a couple of months before Jack came, because doing those two things at one time, the fulfillment portion of the campaign was really intense and hands-on, almost as much as actually running the campaign had been. And I think, you know, I think there were moments where it would have been easy to get overwhelmed, but having that team in place, having the support of my family and husband made it so much more manageable for me personally, and I had a great time. I mean, I think, you know, 90% of that, and for people who are, you know, aren't as lucky to have, you know, as loving a family or as fast-acting a team as I did, I think just keeping it in balance and having a fantastic attitude about the whole thing was a really big part of pulling both of those things off at once. I was so excited to see Gear come to life, and I was so excited to see Jack come to life, and that made for a very interesting kind of, you know, Christmas season. and because it was because it's a kitchen tool and something that people use in the home, oddly enough, kind of rounded out the story in a very cool way, because the final kind of PR push and getting the product into stores after we finished fulfilling in January, I was, you know, walking to J.B. Prentz Chef's Tools in New York, 8 months pregnant, to deliver spatulas to them. And it's those types of stories that actually become really memorable and kind of the most fun of the whole thing.
Wow. Gail, my final question is, I heard that you like the colors, Gail. I was at the spatulas, and I see all those blazing colors, and her energy that she has, the colors represent you. And I was wondering, was Jack the color coordinator? And the other thing is, can I special order colors? Is there a special order? Like, if I wanted a purple one, can I order a purple one or a different color? And those are the two questions.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, I think we just wanted it to be like a really bright and vibrant rainbow, and that's kind of what we were feeling. It was such a happy project for us, and such a happy time for all of us. And so when Christian, who's our creative director, and I sat down to think about the colors, we realized, you know, we can't just do this in red, which is our brand color, and we can't just do it in red, green, and teal. We've got to just do them all. And we had a lot of pushback, as a matter of fact, for that decision. I think people thought that we were going to have too many colors and it would be splintered. And for some reason, it just kind of felt right. It was actually one of the most intuitive decisions that I made, or that we made the entire time. Because it actually didn't make as much sense from a business perspective. It was expensive to manufacture that many colors at once. But for some reason it felt right. And then as it turned out, you know, the front page of the New York Magazine gift guide kind of proved it for us. It, you know, and it was
wow.
It was right there, a big pinwheel of color. So yeah, interestingly enough, it might have been Jack, because it was one of those intuition moments. And if you want to order a special color, it absolutely is possible. We're going to introduce two more colors to the line this summer, and then you know, as we go, we may phase in a couple more as kind of special editions or limited runs. But you've got my email address. If you want one that is a special edition just for your kind, it absolutely is possible.
Well,
wow.
Wait a minute. That's not fair now, Samantha. First of all, you have to tell us now. You know, you put two things. He can't have a spatula because he's a guy. So I'm just going to be the one to have it. And I would love to know what the two colors are you're going to have for this summer.
Oh, all right. I'll give you a little hint. So we've got a new color coming out called Studio White, which was the trickiest actually of all of our colors, because we wanted to make sure that the white was color safe. You know, if you mix a big Indian curry or grandma's spaghetti sauce with a white spatula, we wanted to make sure that your spatula that was white before didn't come out as yellow or red by the end of it. So we were able to figure it out with the silicone, and it's a kind of a soft white color, a tinge of gray to it. It's really beautiful, and I think it'll go great in a lot of people's kitchens, and it looks very clean. It stays very clean. And then the special edition that we'll put on the website in the next few weeks is a bacon spatula. So it looks just like a strip of bacon.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
You can have that one, Jay.
So,
you can have that
one. Oh,
yeah,
I'll take it.
That's the one that all the guys love. But, you know, but in truth, our creative director is a guy, and he wanted to make sure that the colors were, you know, vibrant, and a few of them are soft, but also, you know, guy friendly. We didn't want it to be, it's not the pink and magenta spatula set. You know, it's, unless it's Valentine's Day, and then go for it. But got red and black and you know, a really cool deep teal color that tend to be very popular with guys and the fab.com crowd.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, I have to tell you, I love the pink, you know, so I'm going to be buying a pink from you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the support.
I love color. And so seeing it just pop like that has been, you know, is amazing. And, you know, listen, give in any way that we can support you, we will. And, you know, we have one last question for you, Samantha, besides thank
sure.
you for being on with us. Our last question is, what is your favorite cause or charity that you're passionate about?
You know, I am a cyclist in New York City, so bike-related causes tend to be very near and dear to my heart. I had a cycling accident a few years ago, and ever since that, I want to be a very vocal supporter of child helmet bike safety, because if I hadn't been wearing a helmet that day, we probably wouldn't have the spatula, or at least it wouldn't look the way it looks, and it might be a twisted, angled spatula. But I'm very lucky to have been wearing a helmet, and I want to make sure that even if kids don't think they always look cool, that they'll save your life, and a lot of them actually do look cool now. So the problems that I had and the resistance that I had to wearing a helmet as a 5-year-old is well and gone. So if I had to pick one, that would be it.
And, well, you know, I have to say you're right, because I still, when I'm on a bike and I love to cycle, I act like a tomboy a bit, even though I'm a girl. And I love to ride, so I get a little adventurous with that. Well, Jay and I just want to say thank you, and we look forward. Would you come back again and share with our audience later in the year how well your business is doing?
Absolutely. I'd love to. I'll give you the whole update.
Well, great. Thank you so much for your time. And tell Jack and your husband we said hello.
I will. Well, Jack's been with me the whole time. I hope he hasn't been cooing too much in the background, but I'll spread the love to the whole family and the whole team. Thank you.
Okay, have a wonderful day.
Okay, thanks. Have a great afternoon. Bye.
You too. What an amazing interview, don't you think, Jay?
That is wonderful. And it's making me hungry right now. You know, I don't have a spatula here. I sure want to get one of those.
Well, yeah, you were going to try and get a spatula first, and that's not fair because, you know, I'm not saying that you don't cook, but, you know, I do love the, you know, Jay, you have one. I have one, and I love it. And so, yes, I have one. I'm going to rub it in. You don't have one, haha. But thank you. You know, we love this, and we've got some amazing surprises coming up for you guys, you know, in the coming weeks, you know, and just want to thank all of you as our audience for being with us every week and supporting us every week. We have found that we have people listening from literally 82 countries. And, you know, even if that means it's a couple of people from different countries and it comes up to 82, that means so much to us. And, you know, we're a small radio show looking to give back to the community in many ways. Jay is a Grammy Award winning producer, award-winning producer, I should say that, and has worked with everyone from Bobby Brown to Whitney Houston and Vogue and C. Hammer and so many other people. And, you know, I've had the blessing myself. I'm a global consultant, problem-solving, creative consultancy. I've worked in many industries from, you know, the creation of Hulu at NBC, of being on that team and blessed to be on that team, to Warner Brothers, to, you know, working with former President Clinton on his reelection campaign and, you know, sending the Clinton Global Initiative, all the way to just so many different things. And we've been so blessed in our lives so that we just want to give back. Jay and I haven't had the chance to share with all of you about a project, and it's called the Never Alone Project. And we just want you to know that we will be sharing that with you coming up very shortly. It has been a project close to our hearts and one that has been long and arduous, much like Samantha Rose. You know, Jay, do you want to say anything about the project in terms of what it takes, about the work to put into it?
It's just been a very, very endearment project, and it's all about loving one another, caring for one another, and knowing that you're never alone. And no matter what you're doing, people are always holding hands across the world. And I don't want to give up too much information, but
exactly.
You guys are going to
Yeah, you will. And, you know, on top of what Jay is saying, you know, realize you're never alone because, you know, if you start a business, you have to go in and hand the paperwork over to the person across from you at the state level to sign it in. And there's a feeling you get, you know, I'm sure, Jay, when you started your company and you handed that paperwork over to the clerk in your state office, there's an enjoyment about, I've done it, I'm starting it, or the first day you get that new job. You see, as much as you may think you're getting that new job, the person had to hire you. And when you get on that job, you're working with other people. So we are never alone no matter what we're doing. And those times when you think work is hard or you can't pass the test or you lose a loved one, know that you are never alone. So with that said, we are going to leave out with a very beautiful song by Patent Leather, who will be going on tour in Japan this summer. So let's start out by saying, Jay, thank you as usual, and we'll finish off with Patent Leather. Thank you.
Thank you.